This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is Frida Liu. You're listening to Her Vantage on Enterprise, and Her Vantage is where we speak to women of influence and leadership. Looking into the spider web like complexity of politics and civic activism, you can most likely find Dr. Ku Ying Hui, who breaks glass ceilings and is vocal with her thoughts. Inside working with constraints, she persists on this journey of democratization and freedom in hopes to see a progressive nation through her writing and research and teaching. Here with us, Dr. Ku Ying Hui, who is from the Department of International Strategic Studies at University of Malaysia. She'll be sharing her thoughts as in academia, as an activist and an author. Dr. Ku, do tell us the story behind how you got involved in what you're doing right now, this whole journey. Yeah, do share with us.
Okay. Good morning. So I study in international relations. Mm-hmm. So it is a field that I actually chose when I was in 15 years old. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking maybe I wanted to be a diplomat. And politics, current affairs have always been my passion, something that I think living in the world, we should keep ourselves abreast of what's happening around us and things like that. So then, but after I graduated, I wasn't sure how do I go about it. How do I actually advance the course in talking about politics and stuff like that? So I actually started in several corporate sectors, in working in companies, but I kept hopping jobs, changing my jobs and trying to look for something that can keep me going and some passion. Mm-hmm. So then that's when I joined the Human Rights Commission of Malaysia, SUHAKAM. So that's where the love of the human rights work developed. It has always been there. And then by being part of the SUHAKAM at that time, it helps me a lot in understanding more about human rights, what I can do and things like that. So 3 years there. And then after that, I left for a year in the Philippines and Indonesia. Basically to find another passion, mm-hmm. or so-called, trying to find some sparks in life and thinking maybe what can I do the next. So that's where I landed a job in the University of Malaya until today.
Okay. So, you know, in this process of self-discovery or even going working with SUHAKAM, do you see a lot of people having an interest, or has that interest started becoming more apparent in the last couple of years?
Well, definitely during the time when I joined SUHAKAM, it was back in 2007. Mm. That was when the first birthday happened. Mm. So a lot of exciting happened since then. Mm. And I do see that people started to talk about politics. People talk about human rights. People talk about democracy. And people talk about maybe as a citizen, we can actually do something. Mm. So it has been 10 years since then, 2007 up to now, 2017. With my students, I would say that most of them, they do aware of what's happening in the country or outside the country. Because by being in the Department of International Relations, whether you like it or you don't like it, you have to read news. Mm. So only that the concern is that how much they are willing to speak up. They realize the issues, but to speak up, it still takes a little bit of time. Yeah. Mm.
Oh, so you still see that we're still being held back in terms of speaking up.
Yes.
Okay. But we've come a long way in the last 10 years.
Yes.
Okay.
Definitely.
Yeah. Okay. Now, you know, with a great sense of sensitivity attached to politics, be it in Malaysia or around the world, what is your greatest motivation to persist on this journey?
My greatest motivation, I'll say that every single small step that you make, it can make a difference. People might say that, you know, if I say something, it might not bring a change. But if you can actually help or change how a person think, it doesn't mean that that person must be thinking the same way as you do or agreeing to whatever that you you say. What I highlight the most is that people should speak up their mind. Mm. Whichever direction that you're coming from, it doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm.
But we should celebrate the diversity, the different opinions that we have. So only with that, that the world can become more dynamic and vibrant, sharing the thoughts and agreeing to the disagreement, I think that that's the most important thing in the society.
Okay, that we're, if we want to be a developed nation, I think, so you feel that a person should be able to agree to disagree, and it's okay that we all have different opinions.
Yeah, of course.
But at least we speak up.
Yes, even in the class, I would not ask the students to agree to whatever that I say. Mm. If you don't agree with me, you're welcome to, but you just tell me, why do you think that my question, for example, you think that this question doesn't make sense to you?
Mm-hmm.
But you can always question me back and say that I don't agree with you because of...
Okay.
Then, yeah.
And not just disagree with you, but disagree with you because of what?
Yeah, when there's a disagreement, I think we move better.
Mm.
Yeah.
Is there a person that inspires you in this field, in this area?
There's no one specific, but I'll say the people that I speak to surrounding me. Everybody is an inspiration, actually. Mm-hmm. I mean, no matter how big or how small the person is. Sometimes, if you go to a village, for example, if you go to a community, those people inspired you the most because I think they live happily with whatever that they have. They are grateful with whatever that they have. I think that's the highest inspiration that you can actually get. Yeah,
yeah, because we're always, you know, not satisfied. We always want something more.
Yeah.
Back in 2012, you were appointed by the Ministry of Education to assist the government of Timor-Leste to develop the Timor-Leste Diplomatic Studies. So, you know, how did you react to that piece of news, and why does, you know, Timor-Leste interest you?
Well, when I got the news from, it was actually through a phone call to my office. I was actually doing my PhD at that time. So a lecturer in Sabah, he rang me up and asked me, am I interested for this particular job that the program that both the ministries are having. Then I said, why not?
Mm.
So that was when in 2013, so I got involved with this project. But the project has actually only started off back then in last year, 2016, where we conducted the very first training to their diplomatic staff after 3 years, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it was, when you go to a country like Timor-Leste, which is a new country, so there are a lot of things that you can do from the ground level. You know, how receptive were they? What was exciting about the project for you?
I actually already written about Timor-Leste even before I stepped into the country. I wrote once about their human rights protection because at that time I was already working with the... I already had the experience with the Human Rights Commission of Malaysia. So my passion on the human rights has always been there. So I wrote a piece on that. But I never visited a country.
Mm.
And for me, it's always difficult to write something when you haven't experienced it, when you haven't feel it. So when the moment I stepped into the country in 2013, I didn't know what to expect. I didn't feel much or given much thought about it. But that was when I found out this particular person called Kamal Bamadach. He's a Malaysian mixed parentage of New Zealander.
Mm.
So I found out about his story, how he was killed in 1991 during the Santa Cruz massacre.
Right.
And then when I came back from Timor-Leste, I wrote the second piece about Timor-Leste, about Kamal Bamadach. That's where my passion with the Timor-Leste started, because in the land of... At that time in Timor-Leste, 2013, basically, the country is basically, I use the word empty.
Mm.
Empty in a nice way. You don't see much people, you don't see much shops, you don't see basically nothing much.
Right.
But it's interesting.
Mm.
So that's where I kept reading and writing about Timor-Leste until my very... 2016, after 3 years, I went to Timor-Leste again, and there have been much developments going on.
Right.
So that's where my passion has started, developed even more since then.
You just came back as well.
Yeah, I just came back. This year has been quite extensive.
Mm-hmm.
I went there in February, April, and June for various reasons.
Okay.
So I started trying to pick up the language, trying to learn about more about the people, because I think that the passion really developed very, very strongly when I started to speak to the people. I remember in 2016, I was at a beach and then I saw this man with a daughter of 2 years old. And just with a boat. So I asked him, what is he doing there? And then he said he's waiting for the to go fishing. I said, is that what you do? He said, not really. I said, then what do you do for a living? He said, nothing much. I will just go and catch a fish. I said, if you catch a fish, what will you do with it? He said, if I catch one fish, I will eat it. If I catch more than that, I might sell it. It really depends. But that strikes me on how people feel grateful with their very little, small little things with their life. And I think that inspires me a lot and keep learning about the country and the people.
Right. Yeah. We'll talk about the more about the work that you do here. I'm here with Dr. Koo Ying Hui from University of Malaya, talking about human rights, politics and such. Stay tuned to Her Vantage BFM 89.9.
Bureaucratic failures multiply. BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Her Vantage on Enterprise. Good morning, this is Frida Liu. Her Vantage is where we speak to women of influence and leadership. I'm here with Dr. Koo Ying Hui from the Department of International Strategic Studies, University of Malaya, talking about her work in many things, right? Throughout your career, you've juggled being life in the corporate world, which you have given up, I guess. You're a columnist, a lecturer at UM, a researcher, an advisor. Is there something that you're more passionate about, or it all interlinks?
Well, I juggle between family and work. But the work is, I always believe that work should be passion. And when you manage to do something that you don't feel like it is a work, it is a job, you have achieved something. Because basically you live with it every day. And it's very important to find that particular passion in your life. So, yeah, I think that's basically what I do every day. I don't feel like it is a job. There's no stop. It can go on every day. Because I think the work on human rights, on even talking to people is something that you do every day, right?
Right.
And then you're learning every day. You learn from people every day. So it's a daily kind of thing.
So this was the interest that you had at 15, but at the same time, you've also worked in the corporate world, right?
Yeah.
How do you find that? Did you find that your life in the corporate world was relevant in your journey right now?
Yeah. It definitely shaped me, because in a corporate world, you live in a world that is very fast-paced. And that helped a lot, actually. That helped a lot in, you know, that when you do something, you have to deliver, you have to see the outcomes. And that helped in the sense of juggling many things at one time. But the thing about the corporate is that I reached a point where there was a job that I did before I given up corporate, is that the business conferences that I've been organizing. So within 20 days, you have to come out with a business conference with the programs, with the speakers, everything. 20 working days. So it's really fast-paced, but that trained me a lot.
Okay.
But in the end of the day, the satisfaction didn't come true. So that strikes me what's happening. So then I was thinking, maybe the money is not the motivation. Money is never a motivation. The money comes in when you get a commission, when you get people attending your conference and things like that. But that didn't carve a smile on my face. It just feels something is wrong.
Okay.
So that's where I stopped for a while, and then I think maybe corporate is not something that I'm really into.
Right.
And then I have to find another something else. So
okay. So you had to go through the journey of discovery to get to where you are today as well.
But that's what makes the journey interesting.
Right,
keep hitting the wrong direction, and then you know. But you learn through the.
Yeah.
If you don't make a mistake, you don't learn, right?
Right.
So when you do a mistake, when you know that it is not something right, but I valued every single journey that back in the corporate sector mm-hmm. that I had. I think that really, really helped me a lot.
Okay. Yeah. Now, about 2 years ago, you were called by the police regarding your article, Who Owns the Police? You know, how did you respond to that? I mean, why did you write the article?
Okay. My PhD thesis was actually on Bersih Movement. So after I finished my PhD, I continued writing about the movement, human rights, protests and things like that. And there's not one point that I feel that I'm doing something that I'm not supposed to do or I shouldn't do and things like that. But I just think that I'm doing what I feel I want to do and then it's something that I should do. And that piece came about because that's just a part of my thesis as
right.
well. So I kept doing that. And when the morning that I got a call, I knew that a friend alerted me that the IGP actually tweeted the article.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that he tweeted. But I didn't give much thought about it. I didn't feel anything.
You thought, oh, great article.
Well, I basically didn't give much thought. I just like, okay, so that's it. So only until the next day, then I got a call from the police and then saying that about this article and then things like that. And I think, okay, why should the police call me because of an article that I mm-hmm. wrote? And then it's just something that I think an academic should do, writing about something that you know and then in the simple language, trying to, contribute to the society by writings and things like that. So that's when, the police called up and then the investigation. And but so far, after 2 years, and nothing happened.
So do these things frighten you, or do these things confirm that you are on the right path?
It strikes me to the sense that I shouldn't be called at the first place. I still think that I shouldn't be called for an investigation at the first place because of what I wrote. And it is a question, and I think as an academic, we should question.
Yeah.
We should not take in as whatever that we read or we listen.
At face value.
Yeah, but we should question back and then throw it back to the society on what they think.
Yeah.
Of course, by public writings, I do receive a lot of criticisms now and then. It is not all the praising, but sometimes. But the public writings help me in terms of taking in the criticisms. Because when you write publicly, basically, you open up yourself to everybody.
Yeah. So good and bad.
Yeah, good and bad. And sometimes it can be quite difficult to take in of how people get it out of context
right.
of what you actually return and things like that. But I think that is a good experience. I wouldn't say frightening. It might not be the right word, but it just shows that the reality of the society that we are living in.
Right.
Yeah.
Women in politics or women in this field, right? Is that a consideration? Do you see more women coming in, or it's kind of fair in terms of that gender space, or do you think more women should be involved in speaking up in politics?
Yeah. Well, actually, I have more female students in the class than a male. And if you look at the statistics for the university intake, you will see more females than the male. So in terms of speaking up in the class, I don't feel or I don't see problems with the females speaking up. Actually, the females, sometimes they tend to speak up more than the men. But it just happened after they finished the studies and what happened. So I think that there must be some the women. Some they might go into marriage or having kids, and then they find difficult time to juggle with their families and things, and then they might drop out from the workplace. And I think that's what happened. But I do not see that the female doesn't speak up as much as the male. Yeah.
Right. So, but it's encouraging if we get more, both genders more involved in this area.
Yeah, I think that's a reality of the patriarchy society that we live in, on how people perceive the female and the male, the roles.
Have you written about this? Have you covered about this?
Yeah, I think I've written one or two pieces about women in politics during the case of Diana Sofia, when a pretty woman her, if people see you have a nice appearance, and then why is people dressing up nicely can't be in politics? Why should you dress up like an auntie if you're in politics? That's the one thing that always puzzled me.
Mm.
So when people played up the issue of the Diana of being just a pretty face or whatsoever, I don't find appearance basically has nothing to do whether you should be in politics or not.
Or not, yeah. Now, you are also an associate at the Asia Centre. This was established in 2015 and is located in Bangkok. The centre is a social enterprise that seeks to improve the lives of people in the region through innovative and collaborative partnerships. So, what is it that you do there at the Asia Centre?
Yeah, I just joined Asia Centre in this year, actually, just very new. Asia Centre is a social enterprise that founded by Dr. James Gomez and Dr. Robin Ramcharan. And it is located in Paya Thai, Bangkok. Basically, the reason of why they set up this centre is that the academic community has become so restricted that people talking about just the ranking and then writing in the journal, just a strictly highly indexed articles, journal articles. But the human touch has been losing. So that's where they founded this center. And then when I first found out about this center, I was very interested with the concept, basically. It's a center set up by the academics. And they do have academic conferences and things like that. But whenever they have conferences or forums and things like that, it is not just for the academics. It is for the member of the civil society as well, and for the practitioners. So that's what's interested me the most, because I think in the field of human rights, you can't be talking to just the academics, especially if you don't go on the ground. If you don't go on the ground, you wouldn't understand what is really happening. So by having a conferences or that you have that practitioners or member of civil society, that helps tremendously, because you hear from their perspective, because they, after all, are the expert. The academics, they're right, and some, they are activist academics, but those people on the ground are the people who actually have the first-hand experience.
Right. So you, as an associate there, you're also involved in the conferences or that's relevant to you and all that?
Yeah, now and then, yes.
Okay. Now, do you see 10 years, 2007, we probably had a awakening. Do you see the younger generation being more vocal about, politics and human rights? And what's your advice to all of us?
Yeah, I definitely see the increasing of in terms of the political awareness among the young people. They started to speak up, but sometimes the fear is holding them back. They're still doing their own self-censorship. Should I say this or shouldn't I say that? Especially among a group of friends, they have peer pressure.
Yeah.
What if I don't share the same
thoughts?
With another friend, I might lose a friend. And that's what happened in the Facebook, right?
Right.
I unfriend you or you unfriend me just because of something that you write. So I think that's one thing, the peer pressure is one thing that the younger people still feel that. But the political awareness is definitely there. People definitely talking more about politics, more about the society, but just it's a long way to go, of course.
Right. So I guess we shouldn't be afraid to be different in that sense, and know that there are going to be other people who probably feel the same way about you. And it's okay if you don't as well, but the ability to express yourself.
Yes, exactly.
All right. Thanks for being with us and sharing your thoughts. I've been speaking to Dr. Koo Ying Hui from University of Malaya. You've been listening to Her Vantage on Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.